Welcome back. So today, a couple announcements on the Tiny Box competition. You're tasked with selecting your groups by today. Has everybody done that? Let me know if not. If there's any people who are having trouble finding a group. Still a bit new to Canvas, but I'll see if I can find a way that you can report through Canvas just so that I can know who's all found one. At the moment, I don't have any way for you to prove that you've done that other than I'll take you at your word if nobody says they haven't. Okay. And then the first real assignment is this individual design report, which is due a week from Friday. It's a bit lighter homework this week. It'll be light again next week. Give you time to be working on this, but make sure you're not waiting until the end. Okay. Be working on that now. Any questions on that? Okay, if not, then the plan for today is I'm going to wrap up a couple things, go over some simulations of the SRC that we've been looking at, showing some cases kind of beyond what we solved analytically. And then my plan is to just do an example of solving state plane equations using MATLAB based on the comments from the last homework. It's like that's something we could use a look at. I'll give examples of a couple ways to do it that are by no means the only or best ways, but just if you had trouble on the last homework getting from your set of state plane equations to an actual solution, show a couple ways we could do that. I'll use the SRC that we've been working on because we have a closed form solution to it, so then I can compare anything I do numerically to that to make sure I'm doing it correctly. Okay. Hopefully that'll work well. The homework for this week, like I said, is a little bit short. What it is taking the SRC we've been working on, modify it a little bit so the voltages aren't matched, and then go solve those state plane equations, which is another chance to go through that. And like I said, we'll give some example today. Okay, so the SRC that we've been working with, this dual active bridge like converter, but with a series resonant tank, where we design the resonance of this tank L and C to be somewhat in the vicinity of the switching frequency so that we get these resonant waveforms during normal operation. We went through, solved the state plane, sketched the state plane first. Because of the symmetry, we really only had to focus on subintervals 1 and 2, and then could just mirror it for 3 and 4. Solve that to get a set of equations, then solve those equations. And in this case, we were able to substitute everything, get from a closed form solution for normalized output current as a function of this beta interval, which is one of our controls, the phase shift. Okay. And then plotted that. This is just a plot of this equation for varying values of F and a range of beta. And I plotted for F greater than 1 and kind of close to 1, which means that the resonant frequency is a little bit lower than the switching frequency, but somewhat in the vicinity of it. A couple reasons for doing that. One that we'll look at in the next section of lecture that talks about, okay, where is it possible to obtain 0 voltage switching, which constrains me to F greater than 1, that I want to run my switching frequency up above the resonant frequency. And then I stopped at F is equal to 1.5. If I go a lot further, this thing begins to look non-resonant. I'm switching way faster than that resonant frequency. It's just going to look like a dual active pitch. Okay. And I comment on this here. We looked at the stresses, comparing the DAB to the SRC. I said for the series resonant converter, our peak current stresses are going to be a little bit larger than the DAB. That's true over this range. If I ran F up to like 10, I could start to approach this line, but it would no longer really be a series resonant converter. That cap would be there, but it would just be behaving like a DC blocking cap. The other thing I wanted to clarify on this, F for either of these F is FS over F naught. Just in case it was confusing why the series resonant converter goes from 1.05 to 1.5. Here we have a whole range. These are two different Fs, right? So both are FS over F naught, but here omega naught was 1 over root LLCP, where CP was the equivalent parasitic capacitance of the switching devices on the primary. Here, omega naught is 1 over root LLCR, where CR is the tank capacitance. There are two different capacitances. One thing to keep in mind, comparing a single F on either of them might not be a direct comparison. Just can't do that. So before we dive into the MATLAB example, I'm just going to kind of talk through some waveforms from an example simulation. Here's the simulation I'm running. It's just the series resonant converter that we talked about. These are some blocks that just give me gate drive signals for a half bridge, complementary signals for the high and low side devices with a controllable phase shift between them. The parameters are listed up here, and I'll list the important ones on the slides coming up. And then down here are just a bunch of controlled sources that are voltage dependent or current dependent voltage sources that let me look directly at normalized parameters. So I have, for example, MP is the voltage between switch node 1 and 2 divided by V base, which is VG. JLP is going to be current through the inductor divided by V base times R naught. Just putting these things so that my plots will have the correct labels on them. It says JLP, getting this, but that is IL divided by I base. One thing that's going to make the plots look a little bit different than what we saw slightly is that there is a 500 milliohm resistance internal to the series inductance. And I put that there just to speed up the conversions in the simulation so the thing doesn't oscillate for 5 minutes of simulation time before it converges to steady state. I just damp that to make it converge. It'll cause all of my semicircles to be a little bit decaying in radius. It'll be relatively minimal difference. So first, just the middle of the road operating point, operating with FS is 200 kilohertz and a tank resonant frequency of 130 kilohertz. We have F a little bit greater than 1. Matched input and output voltages and a transformer turns ratio of 1. And then a phase shift to give me 2 amps of output power. On the bottom left here are time domain waveforms. VP and VS are the output voltages of the primary bridge, the inverter, and the secondary bridge, the rectifying full bridge. And then I have the capacitor voltage and the inductor current in the resonant tank. And they look more or less like the waveforms we sketched. Top right is the state plane that we solved, which is the JLMR state plane, the normalized voltage on the tank capacitor and tank inductor. And then the bottom, we didn't actually solve this for this converter, but this is the state plane from the DAB. So this is primary side voltage VP versus JL. What does that state plane look like?
Yeah. Those simulations done in LTSpice.
This is all LTSpice.
Is it like a special function that allows LTSpice to have multiple values for like a parameter along the x-axis, for example, like
this? You can set the x-axis to whatever you want. So if you, I think right click, maybe left click on the x-axis, pop up and it'll say time from a minimum value by a step to a maximum value. Where it says time, you can delete that and say V of MP, and then your x-axis is this voltage. Now I'm plotting JLP on an axis of V of MP. Sure, yeah, it's just a parametric plot of it. Put whatever. Okay. So this like I said, is the DAB like state plane one that we neglected in our analysis that assume there's no capacitance for those devices. I put a little bit in here so we could see what's happening. So here I've got pretty nice behavior using kind of our thought process from the DAB. I've got these nice resonant arcs that carry me from some normalized value of 1 to minus 1. That means I'm going to be soft switching, right? I resonate all the way down. I have nice soft switching type behavior on the primary bridge. I have these spikes, which are a little bit different than what we saw in the DAB, and that's just because of the sinusoid superimposed on the currents and voltages. It means that over what was our interval 4, where we normally just sat right here in the DAB, now the waveforms are going to increase and decrease. That'll just look like moving up and down before I start switching. So now let's change some things about operation here. Just going to higher power. So I increase the phase shift between the primary and secondary bridge, keeping the same switching frequency to get up to 6.5 amps at the output. Happens, the state plane grows bigger because the voltages and currents are larger. Looks pretty similar. If you look at the values here, we're 800 millivolts. On both axes here, we're 250. Similar shape, grew a lot bigger. Now, when I look at the switching behavior, I'm a lot narrower and taller, indicating that I've got a whole lot of current, and these switching edges are going to be almost vertical. I've got a ton of current available that extends my switching state plane to be taller, and then to get from minus 1 to 1 is almost zero theta. It'll be almost just linear straight across. And conversely, if I go to a very low power, take my phase shift very small. So I have only 500 milliamps of output current, very small tank current. State plane to the SRC shrink, now only 880 millivolts, same general shape. When I look at what's going on the primary side, I now see that when I have this switching interval, this arc here, I start at a current low enough that I don't have a big enough radius to resonate all the way to minus 1 and achieve ZVFs. It means that I resonate as far as I can down to 0, and then this, all non-ZVS hard switching. It means I am going to have some capacitive loss here. So to low enough currents, when I start to switch, I don't have enough energy in the inductor. I can't get ZVF. This is kind of what that state plane will look like when I have to hard switch. Okay. A couple other cases here. I change the switching frequency to be approximately equal to the resonant frequency. A little bit off just by rounding on my L and C values. What I get on my SRC state plane is nearly a perfect circle. Okay. And if I got rid of that damping resistance at zero phase shift, I could get this to go to basically just a single circle, resonating back and forth. This little deviation here is only because as I resonate around, my radius is decaying a little bit. I got to make that back up. I can get really nice waveforms, nice soft switching, tons of current available for soft switching. The problem is I've got 1 amp out and 15 amps resonating through my tank. So I've got a whole lot of circulating current because of this full-scale resonance, and it's almost none of that is getting rectified to output current. If I look at my IL over 1/2 period, it's almost zero average. Little bit shifted up, that's how I get the 1.2 amps. But then basically, if I wanted to sketch I out, it'd be this half of IL and the same half of IL. That average is nearly zero with huge amplitudes. I have a lot of conduction losses for a little bit of output power. Generally not a great way to run if I can avoid it. And then in this one, I drop the output voltage down to 75 volts. It means it's now during this alpha interval where we previously said we should have 0 volts across the tank. no longer have 0 volts across the tank. Similar to the DAB operating away from turns ratio equals conversion ratio, I get this ramping effect. Now, during this long interval, my alpha interval, some voltage applied across the tank that's steadily ramping things. So I get kind of a triangle wave superimposed on top of everything. Okay. Another thing this does is it changes the polarity of some of my values. So this point right here is what was, that one referenced this point here, which we called back minus M2J2. I still want to label that point the same. What happened? Well, J2 is now less than zero. Kind of with the way I labeled everything, labeling the negative currents minus J2 and the positive currents J2, implicitly assume that I can make all of these parameters positive the way I originally labeled it. But now, as I go to these alternate operating points, particularly as voltage changes, it's possible that the polarity of one of these things can change. Is my solution still valid when one of these things changes polarity? Well, I mean, the state plane is still defined in the same manner. Here, the solution we have won't be valid at all for this operating point. We did everything with Vg is equal to V out. But even if I do a new solution for Vg is not equal to V out, if any of these parameters change polarity, it can potentially cause my solution to be incorrect. It really comes down to how you've implemented all these arctangents that we use. If you write those and when you're solving, keep in mind arctangent is not necessarily between 0 and pi over 4. Keep your sign convention and let arctangent go to a negative value here. Solution may still be valid. It's a place you can trip up pretty easily. Everything we've done so far, it didn't matter whether I'm using arctangent with sine convention or not. Once parameters start changing, see if I kept it. Solutions here, when I solve for alpha, say it's arctan of this plus arctan of that, as soon as M2 over J2 changes polarity, the way I implement this arctangent matters, right? Because it's different. Minus M2 over J2 is a different thing from M2 over minus J2. When you look at arctangent, it matters whether the sign's in the numerator or the denominator, which quarter of the circle you're in, right? So depending on how I implement that, my solution may become wrong as these things change polarity. As long as the way I've written things here, assuming everything's always between 0 and pi over 2, no problem. But as soon as that changes, you need to worry about that sign convention. Okay. So that has the potential to throw our solution off if that occurs. Okay. And then the last one here, the case I just mentioned in the comparison to the DAB, if I just increase the switching frequency, so it's now about 6 times greater than the resonant frequency, my waveforms start to just look like a DAB. I'm switching so fast that I don't really traverse any significant portion of the resonance of the tank. And my SRC state plane looks more or less just like a rectangle. My DAB state plane looks as we solve because I'm more or less just operating as a DAB. That tank capacitance might as well be infinite DC blocking cap at this frequency when I'm switching way faster than that resonant frequency. Questions on that?
Can you go back one?
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, is the waveform still symmetrical?
So in steady state in this thing, the waveforms will still be symmetric, anti-symmetric, right? So the...
So we get to assume that alpha equals the theta?
Yeah. So you can still solve only subintervals 1 and 2. So what... this part... well, it'll actually change because of the bias, but you can still only have M1, M2, J1, J2. You won't need to go through a whole period. This won't be true anymore. Right. M1 is not equal to M2. But for all of these, generally, without knowing what converter is, it's an AC link converter where the central waveforms are entirely AC, and it has to be have this symmetry. Otherwise, the way to get it non-symmetric is to have non-symmetry, which would put some DC component through the tank. I've got a DC cap, and I've got a series cap. I can't put any DC through the tank. So it has to be true that there's symmetry in steady state. Any other questions? Okay. Not then, what I'm going to attempt to do is some examples of solving these state plane equations using MATLAB, and I'm going to use this SRC that we just went through, which here's the solution we came up with, and we were able to manipulate this and solve for a closed form solution for J. But I'm going to assume we didn't have that insight and weren't able to actually manipulate and get this closed form solution for J. How would we go about solving when I have equations which are this guy here? Something didn't copy right. This should be F over pi times 2m1. Sorry, I just copied this from another slide, so I didn't have to include it. But here was our output current averaging. I'm going to keep this M1 is equal to M2, just because if I don't, I'm going to take these two equations and plug a bunch of stuff in and find that M1 is equal to M2. So I'm going to use that. And then what I've got left is alpha and beta equations, which are going to simplify down a little bit. This missed M1 over J1. Sorry, this slide is all from before. It looks like things are not showing up or didn't copy over at any rate. So I'm going to pull up MATLAB here, where I have started with up here in the comments are those equations I just copied here when I just boxed on that slide. And then this is what I used to plot the plot we looked at in lecture, beta versus J, for a few different values of F. Right? And it uses this final solution that we came up with. J is 4F over pi times this tangent over 1 minus tangent thing. Right? I'm keeping that here just so I can compare to it. But for the moment, let's assume we weren't able to do that or didn't see how to do that. All I have is these four equations, and I don't see a way to combine them together and manipulate them algebraically. I just want to find an answer. Okay. So I'm going to talk about two ways to approach this. First one, I'm going to be sweep and check, where I am going to pick a parameter to sweep to help me simplify the equations. And in doing so, I'm going to get a bunch of solutions for all values of that parameter that I sweep. I'll have to figure out which one actually is valid, satisfies all of my state equations. Okay. So for just an example, let's say we're given f is equal to 1.25, beta is equal to pi over 4, and I want to solve the value of j for this operating condition. So this is specifying my modulation, saying here's your phase shift, here's your switching frequency, what's the output current? Okay. So I look at my equations here. I have f and beta, but I don't have J1, M1, or alpha. And just having F and beta, I could solve alpha here. Assume I don't see that. I don't see any way to get anything else from these equations. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to pick one of these parameters and sweep it over a bunch of different values. And by pulling that variable out, that'll reduce the number of variables I need to solve and hopefully give me a path through these equations. So let's try out J1. I'm just going to arbitrarily say J1 is between 0 and 0.1, or 0 and 10 with steps of 0.1. I'm going to try every value of J1 and then check whether or not it gives me a valid solution. Okay. So I'm going to put a for loop here that iterates over the entire length of this J1. I'm going to call this J1 range. And I'm going to say J1 is equal to J1 range of I, which is just going to iterate over every value between 0 and 10. Okay. Now that I have a J1, a beta, and an F, I can look at my equations and see with those, can I solve everything? So if I have J1 and beta, in this equation, I should be able to get M1. Once I have M1 and J1, I can get alpha. Once I have M1, I can get J, and then alpha plus beta is equal to pi over F. Okay. Because I've removed one variable from there, I'm going to have an extra equation. Right? I had 4 equations, 4 unknowns. I said, let's just pick a J1. Now I'm going to have 4 equations, 3 unknowns. And what that's going to leave me with is 3 equations to solve and 1 to assess whether or not my solution is valid. Okay. So I am going to, for each of these J1s, solve an M1 from this equation, solve an alpha from this equation, solve a J from this equation. Then I really have everything. I have alpha, beta, J1, M1. I'll use this equation, pi over F is equal to alpha plus beta, to assess whether or not that solution is valid, right? Because I'm picking arbitrary J1s, and all of them except for potentially 1 or 2 are going to be invalid solutions for this operating point. Okay. Let's see what that looks like. I'm going to put these guys just over here so that I can see them. So once I pick J1, I'm going to use this equation to solve an M1. Which is going to give me tangent beta over 2 is equal to J1 over 2 plus M1. So J1 over that minus 2 is going to be equal to M1. Then with M1 and J1, I can say alpha is equal to this. Copy that equation in. Let's say J is equal to this. And then here, F should be equal to pi over alpha plus beta. And there is my over specification. By just pulling out a J1, I said F is equal to 1.25, and now F is equal to whatever from alpha and beta that I saw. So I'm going to rename this guy and I'm going to call him F test and index him so I can look at all of them. So once I've picked J1, this is the F that it gives me. And then I'm going to go look which of these Fs was 1.25, whichever one was, that's the one that's my actual solution. Okay. That makes sense? Just sweeping, picking one parameter to pull out so that it simplifies my equations, then got to check that it was, which one was the right choice. Okay. So if that runs before I do anything else, seems to finish running. What I'm going to do is add a second figure here, and I'm going to plot J1 range, F test. I'm going to make it a little thicker. And I'll make it blue. Hold on, plot. For the full range of J1, just plot F with the dashed red line so we can look at it and assess. Okay, so there's figure 2. Let me zoom in a little bit, go Y from minus 10 to 10. So blue line is whatever I solved for F picking some arbitrary J1. The red line is the F that was specified. It should be the solution of F is equal to 1.25. These two cross right here, which means that's my correct value of J1 somewhere. Looks like about 1.5. Let's say it's out of the way. Somewhere right about here, 1.25. So J1 is about 1.6. Clean this up. That's going to tell me the correct J1. And then from that, I can go back and solve everything else. Let's see if that works. I'm going to index J as well so that once I find the correct one, I can go back and say what was the output current at that point. Comment this out. I don't need to continue plotting this. And then say, okay, my error is the absolute value of F test minus F. Tell me how far off my solution was. The F from this iteration with the guess J1 versus the F I want it to be. So then my real J is equal to whichever J from that iteration had the minimum error. And if that worked, go back to the original figure, and I'm going to plot whatever my beta was and this J that I found in a green diamond, see if things match up. So there it is. Here's my original figure. This curve, believe, is the F is equal to 1.25. Let's just get rid of sweeping F. Okay, the blue curve is my exact solution for beta versus J. The green diamond is the one I found by sweeping and then finding minimum error. Okay. I want to replicate this entire curve. I can then put this whole thing in a big for loop a 4 beta is equal to 0.1 with the pi error plot, and oops, delete it all, bring it back, tab it out. Let's see. So, oh no, what happens? Well, since I'm sweeping and looking for the answer with the minimum error, it's going to depend heavily on how fine my step is, right? I'm sweeping over different values of J1. Back here, J1 gets really small, so I can potentially be way off because of that resolution. If I want to let it take quite a bit longer, I can make beta and J1. Well, beta doesn't matter. I'm just plotting those points. I can make J1 finer resolution. I kept all of my original points. It gets a little better. If I make the step size smaller and smaller, it will converge down. So that's something you need to be careful of, the sweep and step. If the solution is very sensitive to whatever parameter you're sweeping, then small differences may make a big difference in the overall operation. And that does happen back here at low beta. Generally, if you're worried about it, you can gradually decrease the step size. If things are changing significantly, eventually they're going to kind of converge with a small enough step size. Cut the step size in half, then this, your solution doesn't change. It should be a valid solution. Okay. Questions on that? Method one.
Can you explain again why you think beta equals title 4 and it means?
No reason. So assume the homework problem tells you the switching frequency is this, the phase shift is this, what's the output current? All right, so then you'd have a beta, that's the phase shift, and you'd have an F if you know the topology. Just an example to set up a problem. Right? If you instead knew J and had to solve beta, same approach, you just structure it differently. You give it a J first, pick a parameter, solve around to get beta, check whether the equations are satisfied. Yeah. Sure. And post the website. It's not guaranteed that by pulling one variable out, you'll have a nice path through the solution like this. You may have to nest some sweeping here. You may have to say, pick a J1. That lets me solve an M1, but now I can't solve alpha, so now I got to pick a beta as well. Then you'd have to go through, sweep two parameters, and in that 2D space, assess which one was the closest to a valid solution. Theoretically, you could have to sweep a bunch of them. I've never come across one where I had to sweep more than two variables, yeah, simultaneously. Beginning, there are two solutions for F. What do you mean? Were there? You mean back when I plotted this? Let's have a look. So there's actually only one in this case. You what you bring up is a real concern. Let me address that in a second. Here, this is just an asymptote because of this arctangent. MATLAB connects them, but there's actually not a solution here. This is just connecting the point at minus infinity to the point at plus infinity. It's an arctan, right? But if I had picked something else, say, for example, I was given a J1 and I wanted to solve the beta at which that J1 occurs. Okay, so I'd be given a J1, and assuming I solve everything correctly, I'd have this curve as my curve of operation and I'd have two betas that solve it, right? So could be that that's true. Then you have to assess, okay, is there any difference between the two? Do I prefer one or the other? Both are valid solutions. Both this point and this point will give me a J1 equal to 1. Okay. In this case, for the SRC, kind of commented on it with the plot earlier, you always want to select the smaller beta because the higher beta is going to have higher conduction losses for the same output current. But in general, if you have multiple solutions, you just have to assess, are they valid? And do I prefer one to the other? I have no preference, then go to whichever, right? So good question, further hints on your homework. It says, if you have multiple solutions, pick whichever one gives you the lowest peak current. Which may or may not occur. Another question? Okay, I'm gonna do one that's a little bit more general and relies a little bit more on MATLAB. Let me clear the console here, do a second example. Using a solver, okay? And what I'm gonna use is some built-in functionality of MATLAB in the form of this function fsolve, okay? I'll type health fsolve, command window here. It'll give me a description of this function. So fsolve is a built-in function that attempts to solve a system of nonlinear equations of several variables. Sounds promising. Okay, so it attempts to solve any equation of the form f of x is equal to zero, where f and x may be vectors, meaning I may have a system of multiple equations, multiple outputs, and I want to run them all to zero. Okay. So I'm going to propose that we leverage this function to have f of x be the equations we solved off the state plane, where x is all of these variables, m1, j1, alpha, beta, f, and j. And then I'm going to put all of my state plane equations as these f of x, where instead of saying the equation itself, I'm just going to subtract the left-hand and right-hand sides, and I want to set that to zero, right? So if I say m1 is equal to m2, then m1 minus m2 should be zero, right? I'm going to set these up as just subtracting the left and right-hand side of all my equations, and then this solver will try to drive those to zero, which is to say, make all of my equations valid. Okay. So, use it in a number of different ways. I'm going to copy, I guess, this one. Because an important thing now when using numerical solvers in MATLAB is it has the possibility to fail. So I'm going to use this to solve, but I'm going to need to check, did this actually solve things correctly? So here, when you run it on a function with some initial point, you get this exit flag. That's one. If it worked, anything else, it didn't solve. Okay. So I'm going to check that for any way that I use this thing. Okay. So here is my implementation. I'm not going to give any extra inputs. And however I use this afterwards, I'm going to check if exit flag is equal to 1, successfully solved. Otherwise, I didn't. Okay. So I need to give this thing a function. So I'm going to create a new function file. And I'm going to copy my equations into it. Here are my equations from the state plane. Like I said, I'm just going to set this up as inputs are all of my variables. And then my equations are going to be, instead of the equations as written, I'm just going to subtract the left-hand and right-hand sides and then make my output a vector of errors that tell me the difference between the left-hand and right-hand sides of each of these equations. Okay. I call this my state plane equations. Save that somewhere. And then go back to my main function I'm just going to copy my function definition here. Okay. I wrote a function which takes in kind of six variables on the state plane. And it's going to output four errors. So I could use fsolve to solve in this way. I could put my function here. I need to give it an x naught. X naught is equal to pi over four for alpha and beta. J1's one, M1's one, J is one, F is 1.05. Just an initial guess. If I do that, I can run this thing. It's going to now be underspecified because I have four error equations and six variables. And it's going to return any set of these six that'll cause my error to go to zero, any set of these six that'll solve this thing. So I'm just going to get some arbitrary solution. It could be at any J, any F, any beta, wherever it wants. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to look for a specific solution. I have four equations, six unknowns. I can constrain two of them to match the problem that we were looking at before. I'm just going to set beta and F. Here I swept beta, I'll start by just setting it to pi over four again. And again, these are arbitrary things. This is what would come from the problem you're trying to solve. Assuming we're trying to solve a problem that gives us F and beta, and I need to find what the output current is. Okay. So to get those into what I just wrote, go over here and say, okay, beta is now pi over four. But then I'd have to go in and edit this function every time I wanted to try a different F and beta. So I'm going to do it a little bit differently. What I'm going to do is use an inline function. I'm going to say my function is equal to at x, call this function with inputs 2, 3, and then I'm going to run fsolve on that function. Okay, so what I did here was just define a new function with one input x, where x has four values in a vector that are the four parameters I want this thing to actually search for a solution, and then just gave it a constant beta and F. So it's really just changing around my inputs, giving it constants for beta and F, and then redefining something that has four inputs for the four things I want to search over to solve my four error equations. Okay. So with that, I need to change my X naught because I got rid of beta and J. And then I should be able to run this thing. Wish me luck. Equation solved. I haven't plotted it yet. I haven't done anything with my plot. Okay. So, claims it solved it. My exit flag is 1. And what it will give back is what were the inputs x, which is this vector of four things that made that work. So if I successfully solved it, I'm just going to assign those things back. Alpha is equal to x of 1. J1 is equal to x of 2. M1 is equal to x of 3. J is equal to x of 4. And if that worked, see if we can plot it. On my beta J axes, and I use a red circle this time. Take this stuff back out so I'll produce the second plot. Circle is O. Worked. And at beta on this F line solves for the correct point. Okay. I can, again, do the same, set this up, sweep over a whole range of beta. Get a bunch of red circles on top of a bunch of green diamonds on top of my analytical solution. Okay. This is a quick and dirty demo, a couple ways to do this. There are better ways. There's a whole set of theory behind how fsolve is doing this. You can change the solver in there or use different functions that use different approaches to these. We have whole courses on that elsewhere. We're not going to get into that. This is just a couple of examples. Okay. You do need to be careful, particularly with fsolve. It will solve the set of equations you gave it. And if some variable going to minus, 10 to the sixth solves it, it doesn't care. It doesn't know that these are state plane equations and this has to be equal to state plane. It just knows it has these equations and I need to drive the error to zero. Look real quick, fval is the function it evaluated, which was the subtraction of the left and right hand side of all my state plane equations for the solution it had, 10 to the minus 7 across all four. Thing. Difference between, that's an example, alpha and 2 arctangent of m1 over j1 is 0.80 minus 7. It's driving these things pretty close together. Okay. But be careful. Same problem exists. If there are multiple solutions, this one's going to find one of them. And it's going to find the one based on the initial condition you gave it that it found first. It's just going to go to one of the two. You don't really have a great way to tell if there are more solutions. Side in sight. And also, in the case that we just looked at, okay, j is equal to 1. There's two betas that solve that. Hey, there's two solutions, but there may also be a beta is equal to negative pi over 4, something that you haven't considered because it makes no sense. That angle can't be a negative thing because that would correspond to negative time. This interval lasts negative 1 microsecond, which you can't do. And be careful about just giving back nonsensical answers. Should implement, if I want to be more formal, a little bit more checking here. And I'm just saying, did it solve? Should look at the solution and say, is this going to be a valid solution? Quick check on that would be, are all the parameters within ranges that make sense? Are all of my angles greater than 0 and less than 2 pi, or even smaller? Better way to check that would be to take all the parameters and then go and plot my state plane or plot my waveforms and say, just look reasonable. Is this an actual solution to the thing? I'll add in some plotting of state plane and waveforms into the script and post it on the website. And then, unless there are any further questions or concerns, let me know. Otherwise, we'll move on with lecture on Wednesday. Okay.